So I'm going to introduce the next reader, which is Christopher Citro. And I'm going to read his bio, and then I'm going to tell you about him. I have it, so I'm going to read it. Christopher Citro is the author of The Maintenance of the Shimmy Shammy, which is right here for sale, of Steel Toe Books. He won the 2015 poetry competition at Columbia Journal, and his publications include Poetry in Plowshares, which is where you want to be, Crazy Horse, The Missouri Review, Prairie Schooner, all these places I wish I was, Best New Poets, The Ira Review, blog, and Creative Nonfiction in Boulevard, Passages North, and Colorado Review. Christopher received his MFA from Indiana University and lives in Syracuse. So I met Chris when I was in Kansas in probably 2002. Sarah hosted a poetry reading that if you went on too long, they came and they hugged you. It was absolutely horrifying. I'm not really a huggy person. I don't know if it's obvious from my...
We were going to do it to you tonight. Yeah, just for old time's sake.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for not. And there was... I was new to Lawrence, and there was all these really good poets there, and they would come and read at Sarah's thing, and I always wanted to be in a good poetry writing group, so we sort of started this thing, and we would meet once a month on a Friday night, and we'd, not Sarah, but the rest of us would drink a lot of red wine and whiskey and smoke cigarettes. And for me, it was like when I was at Syracuse, I like the dynamics of having to talk about poems, but what was really great for me is like Chris is he's a poet encyclopedia. He's read everything. So he'd bring a poem. We'd all bring poems. He'd always be bringing these poets that I never heard of, and that you'd read and you'd say, "Wow, this is great!" And your hair would stand on its end. And then after it ended, we would go out and we would drink till 4 in the morning and just stand and smoke cigarettes after the bar closed, talking about poetry. And it's his like thirst and enthusiasm and need and desire and knowledge of poetry that is... I mean, I don't know, poetry's kind of stupid, but when you share something with somebody and you're friends with them, it just, I mean, that's what really makes life go on and worth living. So this is my friend Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
There you go.
Oh,
man.
There you go. I've got your bio. I'm gonna read that. Hi, everybody. Thanks for that, Ed. Thank you for reading us your poems. It's wonderful to read poetry together again after probably like 18 years, 15 years.
A long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Since you left us for Indiana.
Indeed. Don't get out of Kansas. So yeah, hi everybody. Nice to see you. Thanks for coming. Thank you, Devin, for setting this up, and thank you, Rust Belt Books, for hosting us. I'm going to read you some poems. I'm going to read a couple poems from my book, The Maintenance of the Shimmy Shammy. And, all right. So this first poem is called Plenty of Room Here Under the Big Top. The old man who lives behind our house told us this was where the traveling circus used to sleep. We smiled and believed him, but only a little. Until, while digging in the backyard for a petunia bed, I hit the elephant's back with the shovel. Carefully, I bent down to clear dark soil from the wide, pale forehead. I called to you, where you were prying dandelions out of the lawn with a steak knife, and you came running, the woman I love. You leapt into the hole with me, and together we dug and scraped away to get down to the elephant's feet, its ruby sandals glinting in the bright spring light. Now and then I'd look over and catch a glimpse of your breasts, shiny with sweat and dusted with soil inside your black tank top. You too busy digging to notice, clearing a stray hair from your eyes now and then. It took hours and hours, but there she was, 10 feet below the lemonade sweating on our porch, One perfect elephant, preserved somehow just for us. Leather headdress encrusted with gold and precious stones. I looked at you, almost unrecognizable now for soil, and you smiled at me, teeth showing like jewels through the dirt. I climbed out of our hole and reached for you. You took my hand. And this poem's called If Only I Thought of It. Her whole family hates smoking. She told me one day window shopping for puppies. I had one going at the time, and she said, my whole family really hates smoking. I nodded and said, okay. I didn't really know what that meant, though. Did they sit around the dinner table taking turns saying, it's a nasty habit? Yes, a nasty habit. Such a nasty habit. They must have been pre-committed, and so was Mona. And so she dumped me. Then get this. Matt says he sees her out the next night with another guy, and this one's got a cigarette in his face. I couldn't believe it when he told me. The guy was blowing smoke rings as they sat alone together at a cafe. Then he reached out, grabbed the rings, and placed them over Mona's hands like bracelets. I could have done that. This is a very short poem called Typical, really. 1,000 chipmunks woke him up from a deep sleep, and he mistook them for angels, when he could simply have been amazed at 1,000 chipmunks in one place.
It's very short.
And now I'd like to read some poems, some newer poems. This is called The People Who Live Near Us Are Our Neighbors. They used to have unfortunately at the end, but I take that off. Two doors down, the neighbor kid hung a white wire reindeer with twinkle lights from a tree as if freshly shot and ready for butchery. It's pleasing to live so near the country, the trees, the rolling hills, and apple stands, but it does mean you have to put up with gunshots into the scrubland on winter evenings. Some nights there's a patrol car parked out front. We wish him and his family the best. We eat popcorn because it's all natural and sort of old-fashioned, and brings us a little closer to the life of the soil. The life of the soil is nearby, past the gas station on 57, up the road from the dog park, across the intersection from where the guy lost control and slammed into a mother of three. He was driving to McDonald's. It said that on the news report. He'd smoked the heroin just before heading out for his Tuesday dinner. His little silver cloud rising above us all, the dead reindeer made of lights, the popcorn, the gradual inconsistencies, and the fields someone still plows and tends and pulls pumpkins from when the morning dew gives gradually way to frost. And this is called Gathering a Few Facts. It's enough on this Monday morning that I can remember the difference between a thorn and a prickle. And it appears as if I'll actually be getting to work on time. It's the same time as it always is in this parking garage, sodium lamp time. Who's walking suspiciously behind the car? Time. What would I do if someone put a gun in through my window? Time. Can a travel mug of hot tea work as a weapon of self-defense? I know I wouldn't want any poured on me, but then again, I'm not a criminal. I'm soft. A true thorn is a modified branch, and a prickle is something to do with the skin only. Most roses have prickles, not thorns, which is disappointing on so many levels. And the kind of thing I have to carry around with me as well as manage morning traffic. I'm keeping it together. I'm not harassing other people in their cars. I see us, many of us, sitting behind the wheel for a moment or two, gathering one or two firm facts to ourselves before gritting our teeth and stepping out onto the street where nobody loves us. I worked in downtown Syracuse for a couple years at a job that I quit a couple years ago, and I have a couple work poems for that job. This is called We Come Here Every Day So You've Already Won. I think anyone who works here should be allowed to go up to the roof whenever she wants. It's only 10 floors, and we're certainly all adults. To stand on top of the office with both our feet planted firmly on its forehead, with nothing on our foreheads but the big, stupid sky. The white sky. The blank stare sky. The sky that won't help buy groceries. The sky we can't live in. The sky that doesn't keep us warm at night. That isn't a place to go when the work day's done and everyone shoots out the building's mouth, heading home, or maybe to a treadmill to try to keep from dying. Or to a bar to try to keep from dying. Imagine how good that would feel. We might jump up and down a little. But we're not going to hurt the building. It's stronger than we are. That's obvious at this stage. We're not going to harm the sky being so close to it. The sky will just back away to leave us more alone. Resigned to this, we're certainly not going to throw our frail bodies from the stone edge. We're not hunched at our terminals all afternoon, picturing how we'll look, reaching into air either side with the sore, bird-like claws our hands have become. And this is called You Can Keep Your Employee of the Month Award. I need to work out a way to keep my robo with me, even at work. Double the amount of productivity you expect me to crank out? Sure, if I can do it standing in my rowboat, looking off into the distance for a heron nest inside the cottonwoods. Am I working quickly enough? Let me know when you get the chance. I'll be floating along the shore watching midges form new constellations against a sky so blue it makes your eyes squeak. I'm going to have to clock in at the start of my day and clock out before leaving. Just make sure the button can be operated by one end of an oar, with me holding onto the other, leaning out of, but still firmly seated in, my rowboat. Dreaming of Lime Trees is the name I've just decided my boat will be called. I'm probably 1,000 miles from the nearest lime tree, but the sparkling water I just sipped is lime-flavored, and that got me thinking. You'd never accept that sort of non-linear thinking from an employee, but I did it on my break. Paddling out toward the open water, enjoying my muscles waking up inside my shirt, the tang of fresh air forcing its way into my nostrils. In 15 minutes, I'll be back, I know you find that hard to believe, at my desk, in my chair, at my computer, with my eyes doing what you pay me to have them do. I will. And when I wobble a little, it's because a robo in an office is going to wobble a little. This is called Sick of Sick. In the future we ended up getting, our colds last weeks and weeks. We spend glamorous Saturdays coughing at the arm of the couch, flinching at the thought of someone touching our midsection. The bugs get stronger, and we look like dogs wandering wet streets seeking shelter. Anyways, that's how it feels today. I hear you coughing from another room. Remember how July felt? I stopped myself in a moment then and thought, don't take it for granted. I forget what I went and did after that, but confounded it 4 months later with windows shut and the furnace on if I don't feel as if I went ahead and took it for granted. When will I learn? We've bought so much cold medicine, we're probably on some sort of registry. The kid at the store doesn't even ask for our IDs anymore. He just rings the stuff up and gives us that look. Do I make myself cough while swiping my debit card, even if I don't have to cough just then? Yes, I'll admit I do. Does it get me anywhere? No, it does not. My brain is muddled with mucus. Every day is the same as the last. Some of them I drag myself to work anyway. The rest I nurse myself. I want to be hot rotting, drunk driving golf carts into hot midnight reservoirs, having sex in inappropriate locations. But I'm nursing myself instead. Let's both get better so we can have sex in inappropriate places. We'll follow that checkout clerk home and do it on the hood of his car while the engine's still warm and the ticking of cooling strong metals. I just have two more. This poem begins with an epigraph by the poet Heather Crystal from her poem Taxonomy of That November. And the epigraph goes, "We were happy and wretched and cloudy and setting fire to everything for warmth." And this poem is called, whoops, "It's Something People in Love Do." It's a late film, not one of their best, clogged with a love interest that never really makes your pants itch.
But when the Marx brothers keep the train moving so the hero can make it to town to record the deed and afford to marry the girl of his dreams, they chop the whole damn train up to feed the fire. Frightened passengers in bustles and waistcoats watch their seats axed from beneath them as women cradle their children and men stand around looking affronted. Then they hack up the walls and the roofs, carrying armfuls of train forward to turn into steam to keep things moving. And I'm not saying we should watch less old movies. What I am saying is maybe everything's not a metaphor for trying to pay the bills on time. I love your credit score. It could pin my credit score to the late summer soil and pee on its head. My credit score would roll over and take it. But what do you think of that chicken dinner I made last night? How caramelized the thighs, the bourbon from a plastic jug. How beautiful that farmhouse looks passing by in the distance. If we could get off this train, we could go get it and tear it to pieces with our teeth, tossing hallways and lintels to the flames. Then we could clean each other's face with our tongues. It's called kissing. People in love do it. And my last poem. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. This is called Our Beautiful Life When It's Filled with Shrieks. I'm doing a balancing act with a stack of fresh fruit in my basket. I love you. I want us both to eat well. We're not allowed to buy blackberries anymore because they're mean to their workers, and you read left-wing news sites. Till when, I asked, and you said nothing. So that's one healthy food off the list. I'm still buying pineapples, and you're still eating them. I guess you've never seen the websites about those. Nobody in the supermarket knows that I am a puma. This morning our cat rolled on the floor, showing me her belly, which I leaned down and rubbed. Beneath a backyard pine tree, the neighbor's cat was eating one of our cat's moles, at least the moles we rent from the landlord for her. It's so complicated staying alive sometimes. The voices of the collection agencies and the answering machine sound menacing. They're paid to sound that way, and they're not paid much more than the people they're menacing, which can get you thinking if you're the sort who likes to think about that sort of thing. Other people subscribe to adventure cycling magazines and read about men who rode across Turkey in the late 1800s, before anything was happening in the world, before cantaloupes probably existed, when you could get an honest wage for an honest day's blackberries, when we loved like fierce mountain storms with the blood of eagles in our hearts, exchanging grocery lists that just said you, 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 all the way down. Thanks, everybody.